This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Famine is likely happening in other parts of Sudan, namely the rest of the Darfur states, central, southwest Darfur, and north-south Kordofan, Al Jazeera state, and parts of Khartoum.
That was Barrett Alexander, a Mercy Corps Director of Programs for Sudan. Details coming up. Also, the El Nino weather pattern is creating a hunger crisis in southern African nations. And Americans imprisoned in Russia return home. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Experts have confirmed famine is going on in the North Darfur area of Sudan and say starvation is likely occurring in other parts of the country. Barrett Alexander, Mercy Corps Director of Programs for Sudan, just left from Port Sudan recently, tells VOA's Carol Van Nam that this week's report by the Famine Early Warning Systems Network highlights the dire situation for tens of thousands of Sudanese trapped by a war waged between two competing military factions in the country.
Famine has been confirmed in North Darfur. That does not necessarily mean there's a formal famine declaration. However, the Famine Review Committee has found that famine conditions are present in North Darfur. I think because of the recent, not only recent, but historically present politics around declaring famine, we don't necessarily expect that a formal declaration will follow this review unless there's tremendous international pressure. The FRC report also confirms that famine is likely happening in other parts of Sudan, namely the rest of the Darfur states, central, southwest Darfur, and north-south Kordofan, Al Jazeera state, and parts of Khartoum.
Now, everybody knows about the conflict, and it's been going on for over a year, but why is it hitting Darfur, the famine, I mean the famine alert in this area and other areas near there so much?
Yeah, the FRC confirmation essentially tells us that the longstanding roadblocks to getting aid into parts of Darfur, particularly North Darfur, with the obstruction of aid getting across the Chad-Sudan border, delays in travel permissions by authorities in Darfur, ongoing conflict, you name it. Now the rainy season is happening in Darfur, so there's continued to be limited access. Those are the reasons that put us in this dire situation.
And when you get into Al-Fashir and those areas, who is blocking the entry points for these aid workers to get in?
It's not only in Darfur. This is a Sudan-wide problem that we're seeing across both parties to conflict, where access across front lines, across borders is being withheld. Even access, particularly in the recent fighting around Sennar State, that displaced 150,000 households to east towards Gedaref and Kassala. Access to those areas in Sennar and Jazeera State, across line into South Kordofan and North Kordofan, have been impeded over the last year as well. There are mutual obstructions from both parties to conflict.
Are your aid workers at risk, the ones that are working in those kinds of areas?
Well, Mercy Corps is not operational in North Darfur around Al-Fashir. We have heard other NGO reports, local partners on the ground, MSF, other partners of ours that are having difficulties with staff safety. Regardless of where in the country, staff safety and humanitarian worker safety is an issue. We're seeing that across the board as attacks on aid workers. As a persistent problem. We saw that with the recent pullout of MSF from the hospital in Khartoum, and we continue to see that across the various conflict zones in Sudan.
A report mentions the Zamzam camp specifically for internally displaced persons. Can you talk about that a little?
Our report focuses mainly on central and south Darfur, so not in the Zamzam camp area. However, the Famine Review Committee were the ones that provided the assessment on Zamzam camp conditions and found that famine conditions are likely for about 500,000 people. In the report that we released a couple weeks ago, We found that in central Darfur, over 4,100 children were screened, and about a quarter of them were found to have severe acute malnutrition, which is the most severe and life-threatening type of hunger. And another 2,800 children, or two-thirds of those screened, were found to have moderate acute malnutrition.
That is Barrett Alexander, Mercy Corps Director of Programs for Sudan, speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam. The United Nations Climate Crisis Coordinator and a top World Food Programme official are in Southern Africa assessing a drought-driven humanitarian crisis blamed on the El Niño weather phenomenon and climate change. Columbus Mavunga joined them in some of Zimbabwe's most affected places where water sources are drying up.
Winding up her two-day visit to Zimbabwe on Thursday in the country's El Nino-affected Matopo district, UN Assistant Secretary General Rina Gelan appealed immediately to the international community for $430 million to ease the food insecurity in the Southern African nation. Gelani, who is also the UN Climate Crisis Coordinator for the El Nino response, told VOA that most of the countries feeling the effects of the climate change did not cause it.
Africa has only produced less than 4% of greenhouse gas emissions, and yet you can see here in Zimbabwe and then in these Southern African countries, massive impact. We need to urgently be investing in communities and supporting governments on not only mitigating the climate crisis, reducing emissions, but also, because it's here today, helping communities to adapt to the changes that we're seeing.
The naturally occurring El Nino climate pattern has affected Southern African countries for decades, but the droughts have been coming more often and with greater intensity in recent years as global temperatures rise. One of those affected is Bekezela Dube, a mother of four, now depending on odd jobs to survive because all her crops were burned by the sun.
Isimo sinzima lezi nsuku. Lonyaka izwi lingananga.
She says this year's rain season was very bad because they did not receive sufficient rainfall and did not harvest anything from their field. Even watermelons failed to grow, says Dube. The World Food Programme says five Southern African countries, Lesotho, Malawi, Namibia, Zambia and Zimbabwe, have declared the drought a national disaster. Angola and Mozambique are also feeling the impact. World Food Programme Assistant Executive Director Valerie Garnieri accompanied Gelani to Southern Africa.
People are talking about a drought that's more severe than they've seen in 40 years in the country. But we're seeing similar things play out across an additional six countries in Southern Africa, where 27 million people are facing hunger this year because of the El Nino situation.
Zimbabwe's next harvest is not expected until March. Obey Chaputsira, a Matopo district coordinator, says Zimbabwe's government is trying to limit the effects of the drought in his district, where 45,000 people are getting free grain and throughout the country.
We have also embarked on the program of drilling bores, because most of our bores, they are seasonal in the district, so most of them are starting to dry up. We have a comparative advantage that we have a lot of sand in our rivers, so we are extracting water from that sand and coming up with piped water schemes.
The government hopes these efforts produce enough water for vegetable gardens to ensure communities have a balanced diet as they wait for the next rains expected in late October. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Matobo, Zimbabwe.
Three Americans unjustly detained in Russia stepped foot on U.S. soil again late Thursday. Waiting for them, President Joe Biden and their loved ones. VOA's Jessica Jarit reports.
A moment long awaited for. Three Americans released Thursday from Russian detention, arriving at Joint Base Andrews just outside Washington. On the tarmac to greet them, US President Joe Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, and their families. An historic deal involving several allies secured the release of 16 political prisoners held in Russia. Their price? 8 individuals requested by the Kremlin. Photos documented the journey home. Wall Street Journal correspondent Evan Gershkovich and Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty editor Alsu Kermasheva with former US Marine Paul Whelan, pictured on a plane and speaking with Biden on the phone. Gershkovich's newsroom erupted in cheers earlier in the day at news of their colleague's safe return. The Moscow correspondent had spent close to 500 days in a Russian prison. Jason Conti is general counsel at Wall Street Journal parent company Dow Jones.
You don't realize quite how emotional it all is until you have this release, you know, both his release, but also just this physical release almost to see him free. And people realize, you know, wow, you've actually been feeling quite worked up and pent up and upset over what's been going on.
Similar scenes greeted Kermasheva's newsroom at RFERL in Prague. Her husband, who works at the network, spoke of the family's months-long ordeal. Pavel Boterin is Kermasheva's husband.
Right now, we're overwhelmed with emotions. We're still trying to process what actually happened to us today. Being in the White House, hearing Alsu's voice from the Oval Office next to President Biden, that was something very special. But it's been an incredibly difficult year for us.
From their reunion under the media gaze, the families are expected to travel on to a facility in Texas to receive support and privacy while they adjust to their return. For Liam Scott at Joint Base Andrews, Jessica Jarit, VOA News.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. In a U.S. election season that has been filled with unexpected twists and turns, social media users have responded in kind with coconuts and cat ladies. VOA's Tina Tran explains.
What do coconuts, childless cat ladies, and English pop star Charlie XCX have in common? They're all part of the online conversation when it comes to the U.S. presidential election. With just over 3 months until Election Day, voters are encountering social media feeds filled with memes and rhetorical mudslinging.
We're effectively run in this country via the Democrats, via our corporate oligarchs, by a bunch of childless cat ladies who are miserable at their own lives and the choices that they've made, and so they want to make the rest of the country miserable too.
Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance's past comment on Democratic lawmakers has gone viral, with plenty of cat-filled memes and videos rebuking it. Everyone from former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to Hollywood actress Jennifer Aniston has criticized Vance, who says the comment was taken out of context and that Democratic policies are anti-family. Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris's campaign is playing on a speech from last year to provide context in its own tongue-in-cheek way, quoting advice from her mother.
You think you just fell out of a coconut tree? You exist in the context of all in which you live and what came before you.
Originally posted in mockery by the Republican National Committee, the quote has since been repurposed by Harris supporters into memes and coconut emojis on social media. Harris's recent entry into the race has generated considerable buzz online, including an endorsement from pop star Charlie XCX, who declared on X that Kamala is brat, the name of her latest album, and a reference to the metaphorical it girl of the moment. In response, the Harris campaign adopted the album's lime green color and lowercase font for its profile page on X, while content creators remixed the pop artist's songs with Harris's coconut tree reference. In an election season that's been full of surprises, social media users are keeping pace. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. news, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
As countrywide protests in Nigeria enter day two, there are fears as the first day turned violent in most parts of northern states, claiming at least 17 lives, including one police officer. Our reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, who is monitoring the protests, tells us more.
Hungry days! Hungry days! Hungry days! Hungry days! Hungry days!
Protesters in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, chant that there's hunger in town. There was an uneasy calm in the capital city on Friday as the End Bad Governance protests entered day two. Protesters began to converge on Bega roundabout in Abuja in the morning, but security officers dispatched them with tear gas. Security forces said the protesters must obey a court order limiting the protests to the National Stadium. The Nigerian Inspector General of Police has put security forces on red alert over the violence experienced on the first day of the protests. Nigerian and international news organizations have reported at least 17 protest-related deaths around the country. The Inspector General of the Police, Kayode Egbetokun, spoke to journalists in Abuja, the Federal Capital Territory, Thursday night.
In places like FCT, Kaduna, Kano, and Gombe, among others, we recorded incidents of unprovoked attacks on our security personnel, where one policeman has been reported murdered and others seriously injured. We alerted earlier that terror elements may take advantage of the protest to infiltrate the crowd of protesters with suicide bombers.
The government has not commented on the reports of deaths among protesters. In northern Nigeria, the governments of Kano, Borno, and Yobe states imposed curfews as part of measures to contain violence related to the protests. The protests in the southern and western parts of Nigeria were largely peaceful on the first day. The End Bad Governance in Nigeria protests began Thursday to protest the country's worst economic crisis in decades, including soaring inflation and unemployment. The protests are planned to last for 10 days, and some economists have estimated that Nigeria stands to lose over 400 billion naira, or about $248 million a day, because of them. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Earlier today, I sat down with VOA sports analyst Mokbilia Barrow and Omolemo Kale for an update on all the excitement at the 2024 Olympics in Paris. Here's our conversation. I have our VOA sports analyst and host of our Olympic podcast, Chasing Gold, Mokbilia Barrow, and our sports intern, Omolemo Kale, on African News Tonight today. Thanks for being on the show, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Mokbi, let me start with you. South Sudan versus Serbia in the men's Olympics basketball tomorrow. Who takes it?
Who takes it? Yes, we are very interested to see how South Sudan fares against Serbia. Serbia is the number fourth FIBA-ranked basketball team in the world. South Sudan comes into their very first Olympics at the 33rd position. What we've seen them do against Puerto Rico, being ranked way higher than them in the tournament. I believe Puerto Rico's ranked somewhere around 16, and they were able to get their first win. This is a do-or-die type of game for both teams. If Serbia wins, they advance to the next round. If South Sudan wins, they advance to the next round. We will watch and see. All they can do is play their best game and put their best foot forward.
Play their best game. Omolemo, let me turn my attention to you. Any drama or anything special happened in the week worth mentioning?
Absolutely, yes. You know, Simone Biles for Team USA won the all-around Olympic gold, capping her performance off with a stellar, and I mean stellar, floor exercise routine. Her total points was 59.131, giving her second all-around Olympic gymnastic title. Her first was 8 years ago after the first.
Talking about medals, Africa has 6 medals. Mokbeel, are we expecting some more coming up soon?
Yes, you know, when it comes to the track and field, we are expecting Africa to get a little bit more in the groove when it comes to these longer distances. We're talking 5,000 meters to 10,000 meters, the marathons and the likes. We are expecting, whether it's Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, Eritrea, we are expecting some African nations to come through with that long distance running. And we also have Botswana and Kenya that'll be partaking in that 100 meter sprint as well. So now Africans are also getting into the groove of the shorter distances. It's going to be great to see.
And staying with that point, Omolemo, what countries are leading the medal tally right now?
Well, so far, we have the United States winning with 39 medals. In second place, we have France, the host, with 28 medals. In third place is China with 26. And in fourth place, we have Great Britain with 24 medals. And in fifth place, we have Australia with 19. But one thing that's really important to mention here is that even though the United States has 39 medals, China has the most gold medals. We actually want to be able to kind of conclude it with 39 medals being the most, but gold being a little bit more valuable.
Fantastic. VOA sports analyst and host of our Olympic podcast, Chasing Gold, Mokbeel Yabaro, and our sports intern, Omolemo Kale. Thank you, gentlemen, for your input.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.